Okay, this is Wombly Watakpe with the Tishinka Witko Brigade, and we're going to be interviewing Deb White Plume, who's with Defend Bear Butte. Good morning.
Good morning, Russ.
I guess what we should start off with is a little bit of intro on who you are and organization, and then go right into the meat of the subject, which is what's going on with the sacred site at Bear Butte.
Okay. My name is Deborah White Plume, and I live along the banks of Wounded Knee Creek in what they call South Dakota. I'm one of the founders of the Intertribal Coalition to Defend Bear Butte. We formed the Intertribal Coalition to serve as the collective voice for all of the tribal nations who hold Bear Butte as sacred land. And what we're doing is we're traveling around to all of the different tribal nations who hold Bear Butte as sacred land, and we're offering tobacco and talking with the traditional societies, the tribal leadership, the headsmen of the people, different warrior societies, matriarchal societies, spiritual societies, and extending the news that we will be having a summer encampment at Bear Butte opening on July 4th of this year. And so we're taking tobacco to our people to come together at this gathering of nations to defend Bear Butte.
Could you name a few of the, I understand there's 30 different tribal nations that have some kind of connection to Bear Butte. Could you name a few of them?
Sure. Our people, the Lakota Nation, as well as our other bands, the Dakotas and Nakotas, as well as the Northern and Southern Cheyenne, and the Northern and Southern Arapaho Nations, the Ponca Nations, and Osage people, Kiowa. There are many nations, over 30, that have a spiritual relationship with Bear Butte.
Are the other nations planning to join with the encampment, or are there other efforts being similar to Defend Bear Butte's organization developing?
Well, there's also a very young organization that formed. It's called the Bear Butte International Alliance. And that's made up of Indian people, tribal people that live around the Sturgis area, which is the closest town to Bear Butte in Meade County. And what they do is they're like a watchdog organization to see what's happening locally with the Meade County commissioners and any building permit applications, things like that. And they're one of our close collaborative partners that we work with to try to stop the desecration of Bear Butte. Some of the nations that have endorsed the work of Intertribal Coalition, we've gone to a lot of the Indian Reorganization Act governments, IRA governments, and the Oglala Sioux Tribe has passed a resolution supporting the development of a buffer zone around Bear Butte, as has the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe, the Northern Cheyenne Tribe, the Black Hills Sioux Nation Treaty Council, which is a treaty council comprised of all of the so-called Sioux tribes, or what they call in America the Great Sioux Nation. And they passed action to endorse the Intertribal Coalition to Defend Bear Butte, as well as the Gathering of Nations. And they've also passed an action of the Treaty Council to host a summit of nations that will be at the summer encampment, which opens July 4th. And all of the different Sioux tribes are involved in this, as well as the Arapahos and the Cheyennes. And we're continuing to travel around to these other nations. Our young men are taking tobacco offerings to open that dialogue with them. And the South Dakota Peace and Justice Organization has been working with us to help us do the things that we're planning. And the Christian Peacemaker Team, which is an international organization, has agreed to come and support the gathering and to actually have people there throughout the 6 to 8 weeks that we plan on meeting. And the Organized Churches of South Dakota just recently took action to support the development of a buffer zone around Bear Butte.
Now, as I understand it, construction has already begun, and I was looking at some of the sites are posted on the internet, and it shows heavy equipment moving, you know, clearing out the area. Could you explain a little bit about what's going on there?
Sure. Right north of Bear Butte, a property has been purchased by a businessman called, his name is Jay Allen, and he's working to develop 600 acres into what he's calling the Sturgis County Line Campground. Now, that's the piece of work that's going on just north of Bear Butte, where all of the heavy equipment is located. He's putting in 155,000 square foot asphalt parking lot, a 20,000 square foot campground bar type endeavor, and he's building an amphitheater that will seat 30,000 plus. Now, he's doing his development with or without the liquor license. And we had a rally April 4th at the Meade County Commissioners meeting in Sturgis to give voice to our opinion on the development of that piece of land. The way it works in Meade County is you can oppose the process of giving an alcohol application approval by the Meade County Commissioners, either based on location or character of the applicant. And we had over 1,000 people attend our rally in Sturgis, and many of the nations spoke to the Meade County Commissioners opposing the location of the alcohol establishment. The Meade County Commissioners, without any discussion, made a motion, seconded it, and voted unanimously to approve the application of Jay Allen. So that construction site out there is the construction site of what will be the Sturgis County line. Jay Allen made a lot of news across the country when he first started this endeavor, because he was going to call it Sacred Grounds. And most tribal people really opposed that name because it was going to be a biker bar type of facility, and we didn't want it named that. We didn't want it held and built right there by Bear Butte. It's about 2 miles from Bear Butte. And there's another development going on across the highway a few miles south, and that's the Glencoe Campground. That's an established campground that's been in business for many years. And he's proposing to enlarge his campground. Currently seats 15,000. He wants to enlarge it to seat about 45,000. So that's another major piece of development work that's going on out there.
And in terms of the building, has there been any attempts to stop the construction in terms of like human shield resistance efforts or anything like that?
Not at this point. What some of the tribes are doing is they have filed an appeal to the Meade County Commissioner's approval of Jay Allen's license. It's real difficult administratively and legally to fight this development in South Dakota and in Meade County, because they don't have zoning laws up there. And they really have an emphasis on private property rights versus, you know, Bear Butte is a national historic site, and it's also a state park. And the lake right down the way from Bear Butte is Bear Butte Lake, and that's a national wildlife refuge. So Bear Butte and the lake have all of these real special designations in addition to being a sacred site. But they're still doing the development because there's no zoning laws. So there's an effort going on right now to get a referendum vote on whether or not there should be a different process to approving alcohol applications. The Cheyenne Nation purchased about 120 acres of land right near Bear Butte up to the park boundaries. And so they hung their tribal flag, the tribal flag of the Cheyenne Nation, which is a Morning Star design. And in response to that, these developers who are out there with their heavy equipment, they all have hung very large, obnoxiously large American flags from their heavy equipment vehicles, and they're flying those flags as they do their work out there. But they're really not being able to do much work because since this whole thing started, it's been raining and snowing and sleeting and hailing, and all of this type of weather is happening. So the construction has been pretty much halted by Mother Earth weather patterns.
Before we get into some of the more serious questions regarding the looming pending confrontation type of activities, I wonder if you'd go back to some traditional Lakota history and talk a little bit about Bear Butte or Khe Sapa and for our listeners.
Sure. What we call ourselves historically was Ocheti Shakomi, that's the Seven Council Fires. In American history, we're known as the Great Sioux Nation. In the 1800s, our people were in warfare with the American military, basically the 7th Cavalry, and we wanted them to stay out of Lakota territory, and they wanted to go through to get to the gold mines out in California, and we fought them to a standstill, and we closed the Bozeman Trail. Shortly after that, our people entered into a treaty with the United States, the 1851 Fort Laramie Treaty, and a few years later, after the closing of the Bozeman Trail, the 1868 Fort Laramie Treaty. Now, these boundaries include five states, and they include the Black Hills of South Dakota. In the Black Hills of South Dakota are a number of sacred places to our people, the Seven Council Fires, and Bear Butte is one of these sacred places. So Bear Butte has been historically, for thousands of millennia, a very special place to Ocheti Shakomi as well as other tribal nations. And we utilize these sacred places to enact and to live our way of life. It's these sacred places. We get medicine from there. We teach our way of life there. And we receive healing there. And we pray there. So these sacred places, including Bear Butte, are our school, our church, our hospital. And in most cities and in towns across America, to protect the integrity of these places and the people who go there, there are zoning laws in place around churches, schools, and hospitals. And that's what we want for Bear Butte. We want the same respect given to Bear Butte. But in South Dakota, they don't have these zoning laws, so it's very difficult to protect our sacred sites. And that's why we're having this summer encampment at Bear Butte, is to help us in our work to create an organized resistance to the desecration of our sacred places. And the desecration of sacred places is going on all over the United States. The snowball activity that's going on in the San Francisco Peaks in the Southwest, that's happening, the petroglyph issue around Albuquerque area. There's all of these battles to protect our sacred places. So what we're doing is we're working to create an organized resistance to this desecration, and we're having the Gathering of Nations summer encampment at Bear Butte, where we want all of the tribal nations to come together so that we can talk with each other and form a collective action to protect our sacred places.
You're aware of the issue up in the northern border in the Six Nations. where the U.S. and Canadian governments have moved in military and to remove, basically to, it's an incursion in which they're taking land in violation of the two wampum belt. Have you heard or do you know a little bit about that?
Yeah, we've heard about that, and I've been talking with different people on the blockade out there to stop the development of their land by this business business corporation. So they're out there putting their bodies on the line there to stop that development. So we're in contact with them, and we talk on the phone with them almost every day to encourage them, and we send what support we can that way. But that's one of the reasons why it's important to have an organized resistance on a continental scope, because individually and in an isolated fashion, we're all fighting these battles for our own tribal identity and our own tribal sacred places. But there isn't an organized resistance where all of our indigenous people on the continent are organized to resist this together, collectively. And that's why we want to have this gathering of nations and bring these traditional leaders and these spiritual people together to come to Bear Butte so we can have this discussion at the Summit of Nations on how we can work collectively and what can we do to protect our sacred places. The Black Hills Sioux Nation Treaty Council is led by Chief Oliver Red Cloud of the Oglala Band of the Lakota Nation. Now, what he made a statement over the weekend at a treaty council, and he said that they will be there in full force. The Black Hills Sioux Nation Treaty Council will be there in full force, and they're inviting our young men's warrior societies to travel to the other tribes, inviting them to come to the Gathering of Nations at the Summit of Nations and to have this discussion on working collectively to form an organized resistance, because in each state there's different laws and different regs and different zoning, and we're all fighting in isolation of each other. And the thinking by our elders is that we need to work collectively, and so that's what we will be doing at the Summit of Nations at Bear Butte this summer.
Yeah, I was keeping an eye on the various struggles, and a couple things I noticed that most of the listening or the general public is unaware of is that in Caledonia, where the Six Nations are battling, it was the clan mothers and the women that pushed the police off their land. In the southern border area, we have groups down there that are where the commandantes are the grandmothers. And in history, it was the women who stopped Custer's charge from at Little Bighorn. I was wondering if you care to comment on the aspect of the important role of women within indigenous society and the leadership issue.
Well, in our way of life here, the Ocheti Shakomi, our tribal people have always been a matriarchal society. Our men hold the actual leadership positions, but it's the voice of the women that guides them. And so we have a real strong matriarchal society in Lakota country, and it's a lot of the women that are doing this administrative work and this what I call the paper warpath that's going on now. And we have a group of women who are meeting and talking about different direct actions that we can take up at Bear Butte regarding these construction sites, because we realize we're not going to win this in the county commissioner office. We realize we're not going to win this at Sturgis City Hall or even at the state capitol in Pierce, South Dakota. We're not going to win this there. This is a move by the business people to another venue where they can make more money. And these liquor licenses in Meade County, they sell for $500,000 per license. So that's $500,000 per liquor license. And there's over 60 liquor selling establishments in Meade County. So that's a lot of money that the Meade County commissioners are making off of these alcohol applications. And the women here, we're in touch with some women biker groups also that are working to support this summer gathering. And we've had a lot of biker groups come out to support us, and they want to work with us to defend Bear Butte. They don't believe in that desecration, and they're agreeing to not drive out towards Bear Butte during the Sturgis Motorcycle Rally, which is one of the biggest motorcycle rallies in the United States, for 10 days every August. So some of these organized biker groups, they're going to not drive out towards Bear Butte at all. So that'll really have an impact on the bars out there, the big biker venue bars that, you know, make their millions of dollars during these 10 days every year. So our women are in the process of developing a collaborative relationship with women biker groups. And like I said, we have our treaty councils and our warrior societies, and we're trying to, you know, make this into a major people's issue where all the segments of our population are very active and participating in this organized resistance to defend Bear Butte. So it's more than just the women.
Yeah, the whole idea of collective is finally hitting home. As I look at the indigenous continent, it seems that indigenous people everywhere are just standing up, and they're starting to get involved and coming together. And it's good to see that right in the heartland of the, I guess you might call it the colonial state, the Lakota people are organizing a collective. I wonder if you would talk a little bit about traditional indigenous leadership based on the Lakota traditions.
Sure. Our basic infrastructure traditionally is built on the Teochbay, and that means the relatives living together. Teochbay is another way to say the extended family. Now, each Teochbay has their Itancha and their Nacha, and those are traditional leaderships of being the leader, being the decision makers, and then the Nachas are the advisors and the decision makers. So that's our basic structure. So it's our Teochbay that helped to form the Intertribal Coalition to defend Bear Butte. So what we're doing locally among all the bands of the Great Sioux Nation is to pull these Teochbay leaders together and make a collective stand. And that's what we did this past weekend through the Treaty Council work, was to gather the Teochbay headsmen from 9 different Sioux bands, so-called Sioux bands, and that's where the decision-making occurs on what we call a national level. That's our infrastructure. So inside the Teochbays, you have your leaders, your decision-makers, your spiritual healers, your matriarchs, and then the different men and women societies. So that's the basis of our organizing for the Intertribal Coalition, is we're organizing along the traditional infrastructure system. Our Teochbay structure across the 9 Sioux bands is the method by which we're organizing, and we've had a unanimous decision by all of the traditional leadership across the Sioux Nation that they are participating with us in the Intertribal Coalition, and they are working collectively with us to form the Summit of Nations, and that will be based on the traditional leadership of not only the Sioux Nation, but the Cheyenne Nation, Arapaho Nation, and Ponca Nation so far that we've gone to.
Are you, in terms of the indigenous people's direct action and resistance, have you, the first question is, have you made any contacts with any of the groups in the South, Southern Hemisphere? And then the second part of that is, without getting too detailed, talk a little bit about what kind of, generally speaking, what kind of direct action activities may be entertained over the summer?
Yes, we're one of the things that we're working on is pulling this Summit of Nations together along the lines of defense of human rights, the human right to pray. We do a lot of work at the United Nations in New York as well as in Geneva, Switzerland. And so we're doing a part of our campaign is to do the educational piece on the human right to pray. And that's including indigenous people all over the world. While the work would be primarily for North American Indian tribes, we also need to include our allies from the South. So we are inviting different people from these indigenous peoples to come and to be at our summit and to create this collective resistance that includes their struggles to protect their sacred sites. So we're making two movies. One is on indigenous peoples, human right to pray, and the other documentary is specifically on Bear Butte. We have a group of young people in Bring Back the Way, which is our family organization, NGO organization, and they have the Lakota Media Project. So they're working on building these two documentaries. So we also are in touch with some other indigenous peoples in the South, and our Black Hills Sioux Nation Treaty Council hopes to enter into a treaty of peace and friendship with them during the summit. And Oweaku, or Bring Back the Way, we will work to register those treaties at the United Nations.
So at the United Nations, the whole idea of the United Nations was to represent all the nations. Indigenous people still are not part of the collaborative of United Nations. Is that correct?
That's correct. One of the things that was going on for the past decade, which was the decade of indigenous people, was the drafting of a document called the Declaration of Rights of Indigenous People. And in that process, the rights of indigenous people are defined, and that document has been completed, and it will be going in front of the commission this year. So it was a collaborative effort by all of the indigenous people and then the states that they exist in or are in conflict with as well. So the United Nations is not designed to accommodate our infrastructure, which is that of Teochpa'e. So we've been having to work with the system of the United Nations, and it's a big system and it takes a long time to change it. But just the fact that they developed the Permanent Forum for Indigenous Peoples is proof that even these huge global bureaucracies can be changed to, I guess that's one of the major pieces of creating social change is impacting the institutions that impact our life. Continuing on in that piece of work to help us in not only treaty rights, but human rights, just basic human rights.
Yeah, recently the U.S. received another tape from Osama bin Laden, and in that he laid out some of the violations being perpetrated against those indigenous nations. But one of the things that he brought up that I thought was real interesting is he brought up the issue of the United Nations, in which on one hand they're a diplomatic body, but on another hand they're a military arm for incursion. And The area he was speaking about was resisting the United Nations force that's going to be going into Sudan. The Lakota Nation and other indigenous nations in the West may not be as advanced in understanding the United Nations on its many levels. I was wondering if you care to comment on what you thought about that statement and how it may or may not apply to the Lakota Summit of Nations effort.
Well, again, it's like our traditional system, our traditional way of life predates Columbus. And so it's hard for other societies and other nations of people to understand how we were able to live and thrive for thousands of millennia on our system and our way of life, which is, for us, it's the Teoshpai system and the Teoshpai way of life. So like I said before, the UN is not created to accommodate our structures and our systems, but we went there and we've gone there and we'll continue to go there because it's a good vehicle and it's a good mechanism for us to become in touch with other indigenous peoples from all over the world, basically. So yeah, I agree, the UN is not it's not set up for indigenous peoples. It's set up for the basically the colonizers of the world.
And the UN so-called peacekeeping force is an extension of that colonizer's ability to continue the colonialization. Is that how you see it?
Yeah, that's how I see it. And I think it's played out regularly. It just depends on the lens you're looking through, how you see what these actions are by these global institutions like the UN.
In terms of struggle and resistance, and we see a lot of it, you know, just globally, one of the really controversial tactics that's being used in the Middle East, it has to do with what the colonizers are labeling as terrorism, and one of those tactics involves suicide bombs. I recently spoke on the radio about that issue and how I thought maybe there may be some ideas to entertain such activities, but I didn't think it would really work in for Lakota people or for indigenous people here, since historically we've already received so much violence from the colonizers. To entertain such tactics would bring even more violence. So with that in mind, what kind of what's the driving force behind the direct action, and where does confrontation or maybe even armed conflict come into the whole discussion?
Well, those are things that are going to have to be talked about at this Summit of Nations, when the leadership, the traditional leadership of all of these tribal peoples will be gathered there. That's the discussion that has to take place, is what will this organized resistance look like? What will it be? What will its goals be? What will its objectives be? What will its timeline be? How are we going to carry this out? Because if we don't formulate an organized resistance, it's going to just continue on in little isolated pockets of resistance. And that's why the leadership will have to come together to answer those kind of questions. That's the purpose of organizing the gathering this summer, is so that the leadership can come together and have this discussion.
One
outcome of the Summit of Nations.
One of the main criteria, of course, would be the economics to organize and to have a resistance takes money, takes some kind of base, a financial base. Outside of, you know, making fry bread stands and all that, are there other ideas that you have that are dealing with those issues?
Well, we have a website It's bringbacktheway.com or defendbearbutte.org. And through our websites, people can donate money or materials to our organizations for use in our organizing and in the planning of the summit this summer. We're expecting many, many, many people to come, so we know it's going to take a lot of funds and resources to accommodate this gathering during the summer. So right now a lot of the tribes are donating. One tribe donated 10 buffalo to us to use to feed people. Another tribe is donating 20 elk, like that, you know. So the tribes are bringing what resources they can to the table to help make this summit happen.
And then when you consider that the U.S. has attacked countries that basically have no armies, they've traditionally attacked indigenous peoples most vulnerable. The Lakota people, like most tribes, we don't have armies, or they don't have armies or militaries or weapons or manufacturing plants to make weapons. So in terms of the militarization, are you going to speak on those issues and come up with some strategies? Because ultimately, historically, the response to any kind of organized resistance usually is militarily. Military response. Could you care to talk about that?
Yeah, that's been talked about a lot at our meetings here on Pine Ridge, as well as through across the broader Sioux Nation, and in our collective work with other tribes. Because, like I said, the Intertribal Coalition to Defend Bear Butte is comprised of a number of tribes. So we've talked about that. We've talked about the response America might have to our summit at Bear Butte. And what we were talking about was how like in the Sturgis area, during that biker rally for 10 days, they have 500,000 people there, and their crime rate goes up. There's more car accidents, motorcycle accidents, murders, drug busts are happening. There's so many people that come there, they can't get enough toilets or porta potties, so there's literally urine running in the ditches. And they would rather have that than have Indians praying at Bear Butte. They're more threatened by Indians praying at Bear Butte than, you know, we don't understand that. We don't understand why they would rather have that going on than Indians praying at Bear Butte. But one of the things that we're talking about is we had an elder speak at Bear Butte when we went up there to offer prayers before the rally, and she said that she was going there out of love for her people, love for her way of life, and love for Mother Earth, and how that was the strongest weapon there could be, was love and prayer. And so she made a lot of sense to the young people who were there. We had school sent whole school buses full of children. High schools came with their buses, colleges, grade schools, like that. So it was really a spirit, the spirit of love for Unchimaka, the spirit of love for Bear Butte and for our way of life that brought people there. And when this elder talked like that, she made sense to a lot of people when she said, you know, that's the greatest weapon there is love for your way of life. And that's what she had to say about that. And this summer, when we do have our Summit of Nations, our people, the Oglala Lakota people, are going to come there in a major big delegation that will be led by the pipe of Chief Red Cloud, that the Red Cloud family has had over the past 100 and some years since the Wounded Knee Massacre. We will be coming there, and we will be led by the pipe of Chief Red Cloud. So a lot of the people that are going there, they're going with their spiritual power. They're going with their spiritual power to Bear Butte.
That's good, because I don't think that any progressive mechanism for organization without that piece of it would last for very long. When you consider that the first Wounded Knee and the massacre that happened was because of praying and because of the ghost dance. In your collective understanding and knowledge of history, this seems to be the first time that this kind of thing has happened since Wounded Knee. I don't know all the history, but in my recollection, I can't think of any other time that this kind of response has been felt and the people have reacted in this way. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree. I agree, and that's something that we talk about all the time here, and that we have our ceremonies to pray for guidance and direction and for help from the spirits, because I think that's why it's turned into this movement of people wanting to protect their sacred sites, because we realize this is our last defense. If they wipe out our sacred places, then they wipe out our way of life. There's no two ways of looking at it. Without our sacred places, then we will not have our way of life, and then we will become not Lakota anymore. They will wipe out our identity. And we all realize that from the elders to the young people. I do a lot of work with young people, and on our reservation and on other Indian nations too, we have a lot of young people participating in what they call the gang culture. Well, I went to talk to these young people and about Bear Butte and about the rally we were having to protect and preserve Bear Butte, and I talked to them about our historical and spiritual relationship with Bear Butte, and I asked them to put their colors down for one day and be. I asked them to be Lakota for one day. I said, put away your gang identity for one day and stand up as a Lakota man. Stand up as a Lakota man in defense of your sacred place. And they did. They left their gang colors home, and they declared a truce, and they marched with us on Bear Butte. And to me, that was a real powerful thing to happen, was to see these young people, you know, reclaim their Lakota identity and put that gangbanging identity to the side. I was really happy to see our young people respond in that way, to stand up as Lakota men and to march side by side in defense of a sacred place. We were real, I think, comforted by that. Us older people were real comforted that our young people can put that away, put it away now, and stand up as Lakota men and Lakota women. Stand up for your way of life and for your people and for your coming generations. Because without places like Bear Butte, without places like Kinghaka Hapaha, Devil's Tower, Matotipila, without these places, we can't practice our way of life. So I think the generations, young and old, understand that. They understand that this is the final onslaught of our identity.
So you had to bring your death song if you're going to go there this summer, right?
Well, no, I don't think a lot of our people even have that way of life anymore, you know. There's been such a major colonization effort that's gone on, and that's one of the reasons why we were so happy that the churches decided to take this position to help us in our human right to pray. You know, they realize that they've done their role too in the Christianization of Indian people. They're the ones the government sent in. They sent in the Episcopal Church and the Catholic Church to Christianize our ancestors away from their native identity. So now it's good that they're organizing themselves to support us.
Well, I just wanted to add my piece that I'm connected to the Lakota people, and a lot of people I know back there, and they also know me. When Wilmer came out here, to where the Northwest, he put out a call to me to find me wherever I was hiding at, and I finally responded. So he was telling me that all Lakotas have to be there this time because this is the like you say, this is the last piece of us that we have to defend. So I plan on being there, and being a Kichita, I have a certain role and a certain mindset that I bring with me. But I take my orders from the infrastructure you spoke of. So whatever they want me to do and however they want me to do it, that's what I'm going to do. But I certainly am going to be there. Could you give us an idea of where to go if we get there earlier than, say, July 4th?
Yes, we're going to set up a number of campsites right around Bear Butte. So people could go to defendbearbutte.org or bringbacktheway.com to get more information on this. But we will be having people moving into Bear Butte within the next couple of weeks, and they will be setting up camp and getting campgrounds ready for people to come and set up their teepees. And we're also inviting races other than Indians. We have a lot of environmentalist organizations that are made up of people of all colors and walks of life, and they have committed to serving as a buffer zone around the Indian camps so that they will be our buffer zone. And environmental groups, religious groups, church groups, peace and justice groups like that are all going to be camping with us as our allies. So it will not just be a Native Nations camp. It'll be also our allies are invited to come, and, you know, we're asking people to be as self-sufficient as they can and to bring whatever they have to share, you know, camping equipment, water containers, food, sleeping bags, like that, because most Indian people, we don't have a lot of camping equipment, so we're going to, you know, we're asking everybody to bring what they have to share, and we're raising money to get teepees together and a great big tent to have a kitchen in, and we'll be having our ceremonies there for the Indian nations, and those will be, you know, only for the Indian nations to participate in, and our non-Indian allies are real understanding of that, and they're not trying to interpose themselves into our ceremonies. They're respecting our wishes that that's our way of life, and they can be our allies without having to go through our spiritual ceremonies. So we're having a good ally relationship built with all of these other peoples to help us make this, you know, summit happen in a good way.
And for the listeners, could you mention the website and phone numbers and other things?
Okay. Websites are www.bringbacktheway.com or www.defendbearbutte.org. And on those websites are a list of phone numbers and contact people and ways to get in touch with us through email.
Well, I want to thank you and look forward to the summer to seeing all of you and sitting down and deciding how our nation is going to be, you know. So, palame apolo.
Yeah, thank you, Russ. Thank you for doing this good work that you're doing, and thank you for helping us to get the word out about Bear Butte.
Oh.